Welcome. You're listening to the podcast of the Baha'is of Florida's Emerald Coast. I'm Ron Fraser. Tonight, we're going to talk about Baha'i marriage. I'm talking to Suzanne Alexander. Good evening, Suzanne.
Hello, Ron.
And Craig Farnsworth.
Hello, Ron.
They're both up in Ohio. They're involved in something called marriagetransformation.com. I'll put a link to that on the blog that goes along with the podcast. They've both been Baha'is for a long time and developed this marriage transformation project over maybe the last 5 years?
Yeah. 3 years.
3 years.
Three and a half, I guess we're at now.
Okay. Yeah, they've got a couple of books out, and we'll talk about that later on. But let's start off talking about Baha'i marriage. Suzanne, can you tell us a little bit about how Baha'i marriage might differ from somebody else's marriage?
Sure. And I should also say that Craig and I are in a Baha'i marriage. We have different last names, and so some people might wonder if we're married, but we are. And there are a number of interesting features about Baha'i marriage. One of the first ones is that Baha'u'llah has said that it's not appropriate for parents to arrange marriages, which still happens in some parts of the world and in some cultures. And he has said that it's important for the couple to be mature enough to make a decision to get married themselves. However, he then says it's very important for unity to be maintained in the family. So he makes the marriage subject to the consent of the parents. The couple then consults with all of the parents involved and together determine whether the couple is actually ready to marry and for everyone to form a family together. That's one of the first very unique features about Baha'i marriage. Once the consent is in place, the Baha'i wedding ceremony then is often very simple. The only requirement is that the couple say a particular vow, which is, we will all verily abide by the will of God. So the commitment of the couple at that moment in marrying each other is that they will follow the will of God throughout their marriage. Once they are married, one of the key foundation pieces of Baha'i marriage is that the couple must practice equality. And when we talk about equality, this is not necessarily that they have the same, that the man and the woman have the same roles, that they're doing everything the same, but what it means is that there is a foundation of respect between the husband and the wife that allows them to reach decisions together, to function as partners together in the marriage. So there's no space for one to dominate the other, for one to say that they're better than the other, to be superior to the other. It's an equal partnership in the marriage.
An interesting observation along the lines of that is, in the marriage education community, which we participate in, one of the leading researchers did a talk this summer at a conference we were at, and he was speaking of that marriage is now moving into a new paradigm, what he described as a fourth paradigm of marriage, and he described it now as a new phase of marriages where, in fact, marriage is a marriage of equal partners, as opposed to indifferent from the previous kinds of forms of marriage that we've seen historically. I found that very interesting to hear coming out of the marriage education work in general.
What about divorce? Is divorce allowed?
Divorce is allowed in the Baha'i faith under very severe circumstances. Baha'is are fundamentally committed to the concept of unity. And marriage is a very, very key piece of maintaining unity and of creating a unified society. So Baha'is are asked to make almost superhuman efforts to maintain a marriage, particularly when there are children who are dependent upon the parents. However, there are key guidelines about abuse being forbidden and violence towards your partner forbidden. And so there are certainly circumstances under which divorce would be permitted. And so Baha'i can divorce and do divorce, but it is strongly discouraged and every effort is made to maintain the marriage. In fact, one of the practices in Baha'i marriage is that if a couple wishes to separate, they must separate for a year before divorce is granted, and during that year they are required to make efforts towards reconciliation.
I know you've been doing a lot of work on the question of character. There's some requirements in the Baha'i faith to investigate someone's character thoroughly before you marry. Can you talk a little bit about that?
One of the key things that the Baha'i writings say is that you must know the character of the person that you want to marry. And we took a long look at that quotation from Abdu'l-Baha, Baha'u'llah's son, and said, you know, we're not sure how to do that. And we talked to many Baha'i couples, and everyone was struggling with how do you know the character of someone else. One of the things we've now developed is a brand new book for individuals called Can We Dance? Learning the Steps for a Fulfilling Relationship. And in putting that book together, what we came to realize was that a fundamental part of the process was for each individual to first know their own character. They need to know who they are before they can even begin to observe character in someone else. And what we've given them as tools is very detailed descriptions of 56 different character qualities so that they can look at their own character and then start to observe the character of a partner by considering things like respect. And you could tell that someone was practicing respect if, and I'm going to just simply read a line from Can We Dance? One of the ways you could tell that someone was practicing respect is if they treat their body, mind, heart, soul, and belongings, and those of a partner and others with dignity, care, appreciation, and gentleness. So for each of these qualities, then, they look at themselves, they very clearly begin to understand their own strengths and their own areas for growth. They can be working on changing themselves, developing themselves, so that they're ready for a relationship. And then they need to engage observation skills to very carefully learn about the character of the partner. It's vital that character be clear in a relationship, that they know each other's character, because those qualities are likely to stay very stable or very present throughout the marriage. Our character qualities are primarily formed by the time we are in our late teens, and so if you see those qualities such as courage and honesty in a partner, you can be fairly certain that they will be there throughout your marriage. Things like your job or the food that you like or how you dress are likely to change all the way through the marriage. Lots of things will change. But character is something that is unlikely to substantially change, other than to hopefully keep getting better if you're engaged in a process of ongoing learning and development.
So the women that marry men thinking that they're going to be able to improve their character are probably kidding themselves.
To a certain extent, yes.
There's an old joke that a woman marries a man thinking that he'll change, and a man marries a woman thinking that she won't change, and they're both wrong.
Frank, why don't you share a little bit, though, about the process of influence?
The process of influence. An important piece we're finding that makes a marriage strong is when both partners are open to be influenced by their partner. And that doesn't necessarily mean that one needs to accept being dominated by the other, but the gentle openness and acceptance to what one might also call coaching is a wonderful way for people to grow within a marriage.
One of the areas that we've worked on in our marriage is flexibility. When we got married, Craig and I agreed that we were open to being influenced by each other. It became very clear that Craig and his family were far more flexible than I was.
That's an understatement.
And it was also very clear that they would all be happier if I made some adjustments in my ability to practice flexibility. Mm-hmm. So they supported me and they encouraged me and helped me then to develop that as a much stronger quality in my life. Some point in the last year, we declared that I was flexible, which doesn't mean that I don't go backwards on occasion, but at least I've gotten much better than when we first got married.
So influence goes both ways.
Well, it seems like that would be based on a number of good qualities, like respect, for instance. Mm-hmm. If I don't respect my wife, it's not likely that I'm going to accept any influences from her.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Very good point. It's how you do it. If you're tactful and gentle and loving when you're giving feedback to someone else and influencing someone else, then it really makes a difference. So all of the character qualities come together and help. The new concepts that we have put in Can We Dance? And also in our book for married couples, which is Pure Gold, Encouraging Character Qualities in Marriage, is a concept called misusing character qualities. So when we have people look at their character, we have them look at the areas where they are effective, where they need to strengthen their use of a quality, but also where they might be misusing a quality. And one of the key examples we can give to help you understand misusing is with helpfulness. When you misuse a character quality, often it means that you use a quality that you're very good at, but you use it in a way that is to excess or in the wrong time or the wrong circumstances. With Craig, he's an adult. He's capable of getting himself dressed in the morning. He goes off
Thank
to work
dear.
Fine in the morning. If I walk into the bedroom and start handing him his shoes and telling him his tie's crooked and maybe he should pick a different color shirt and all that kind of stuff, what's your reaction going to be, sweetheart?
I would be a little irritated. Annoyed.
Mm-hmm. And that right there is an indication of a possible misuse, is if you're doing something that you think is good, because I could say to him, well, I was just trying to be helpful, but the reaction and the response is disunity or disharmony, and there's a problem between you, then you very well may be taking a quality that you actually know how to use very well, but practicing it in a way that's inappropriate. And so one of the ways that we teach couples to get along better in a relationship is to watch for those misuses and apply moderation or add another character quality into the mix to help, because in that instance, I would not be being respectful to Craig, as Ron mentioned, as part of the influencing model. If I have paired together respect and helpfulness, then I'm going to ask him whether he wants any input or just plain mind my own business.
Yeah, I hear a lot of women saying that the men in their life are just too helpful. They're fixing things that the women don't want fixed. And not just a light switch. You know, they're trying to fix the women, perhaps.
You know? They're listing empathy.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you hear that all the time, that the guy just assumes that she's expecting an answer to the problem that she's presenting, whereas she really just wants someone to listen.
Yeah, that's an excellent example.
And that there probably is a lack of respect, because anytime you offer advice like that, the basic assumption has to be that the person either doesn't know or they're not, or perhaps aren't even capable of figuring the problem out for themselves. So there's a kind of an underlying problem there, some underlying character that's not there in the person that's offering this advice.
Well, perhaps. I think what you also have in the circumstance you're talking about there, Ron, is that most men, I would think, would be in a mode of, you know, if there's something broke or not right, well, how can I fix it? What can I do to make it not broke? And tendency can spill over into the kind of conversation you're talking about. So there may be more there than simple misuse, but not sure.
So sometimes when we teach listening and communication skills, we'll tell women to be clear at the beginning of a conversation with the guy and say, I just need you to listen to me. I'm not looking for a solution necessarily at this point, but it will help me to talk through the problem if you are a great listener for me at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Or just to be very clear, you know, I don't want you trying to fix the problem here, dear. So that then that way it's clear the other person can relax and you know, be in the role that you want them to be in.
Yeah, and that fixing mode sometimes is a tendency to, you know, if the conversation's going on long enough, it's a way to, okay, let's just finish this and move on. Where maybe it's not time for it to be finished yet. You've got to step back and be patient.
One of the key communication skills that Baha'u'llah has designed and advocated for marriage is a decision-making skill called consultation. And what he has done is designed a tool that is founded on equality, as we mentioned before, is vitally important in marriage. The couple both have equal voices in consultation. They both share what's on their mind. They both have not only the right of full expression, but the responsibility of full expression. It's not possible to reach an effective decision if either one of them withhold key thoughts or feelings, or one of them dominates the other. It's important that their motives are pure, that there's no hidden agenda going on in the discussion. And Craig's favorite is detachment as a piece in the puzzle, that once you say something, it goes kind of in a pot in the middle of the table. It's no longer belonging to either one of you. That way you can both add to it, take away from it. The final decision then belongs to both of you. What were you going to say?
Change it.
Yeah.
Change it. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't have to be stuck in whatever it is you originally said.
Right.
Yeah, the nice thing about consultation is it's a way of getting past the impasse. The wife wants to go to Disneyland and the husband wants to go on a camping trip, If you can follow the rules of consultation, you can actually get past that stalemate. It isn't, because you can't take a vote, because it's going to be a one-to-one vote every time you take
right.
the vote. So you need a process that clarifies the situation.
Yeah, exactly.
Looking for the, you know, trying to find the common goals, identifying any spiritual principles that are involved.
And one of the key principles is that once you've made the decision, you both support it, and then that way you can quickly figure out if it was a good decision or a bad decision. So you might actually decide to try Disneyland or Disney World 1 year and try it out, and it might be good, it might not, and then the next year you might go camping and try that out, and then you'll have all of the evidence you need to know whether you stay in a motel or a tent.
You folks have been doing these marriage relationship workshops for some time. There must have been some interesting concepts that came out of those workshops as you interacted with these various couples.
Oh, there are many interesting pieces that we put in workshops. Probably my favorite is one that we actually borrowed from a minister by the name of Gary Chapman, the concept called the Five Love Languages. And what Gary has put together and teaches very clearly is that for each person, there is certain language of actions or words or such that speak to that person's heart so that they can hear, "I'm loved." And he speaks of when someone hears in the language that they hear, that they can hear, that their love tank fills up. And if someone's love tank fills up, then they are happy, feel whole, et cetera, feel valued. If the love tank gets empty, then it gets into many things in the other direction. What Gary lays out and we teach to folks, and for many folks, when they're exposed to this, just light bulbs go off. They go, "Oh, wow, that's just awesome, powerful." I mean, we see numerous couples that have just lit up over finally understanding these, because it really makes it clear to folks where a partner is not feeling loved or respected, even though the other person is doing what they think is the appropriate thing to do. The idea is that there are basically five different languages that love can be conveyed through. One of those is giving gifts, flowers or candy or, you know, something physical that the person gives to the other as a kind of a token of their love. And for some people, this is what they, with gifts, then they, "Yes, I feel loved." For others, it's being acknowledged that you did this well, or "I really appreciate that you did this for me," or that, as something that is heard strongly as when they get that, then they feel loved. For others, it's quality time, the time to sit down and really be able to tell the other person what went on in their day, what their struggles were, what their challenges were, what wonderful things happened during the day or whatever, as a different language. For some people, it's doing service, mowing the lawn, washing dishes, doing the windows, whatever. And then the fifth one is then physical touch. For some people, having physical touch is the language that they would preferably hear as saying that I am being loved. And the idea that goes along with this is that if one partner is speaking a language in these five that the other partner doesn't hear as they're being loved, then they don't feel loved. And it's very important for partners to really understand what their partner's love language is. So we take folks through an exercise where they think about these five different languages and write down, you know, "Okay, this one's most important to me, this is next most important, the other person does the same thing," and then we have them come together and share that so that they really learn what it is that their partner will hear as being loved. So that's one of the exercises that we do. Actually do both for singles and for married couples in the two different workshop formats that we use.
And it's amazing, you can have a couple who has been together for a long time, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, mm-hmm. and they have even all that time been making assumptions about what communicates love to the other person. And this is such a simple tool that really can help a couple shift their relationship in a new and deeper direction.
Really amazing.
Yeah, I can really see how a couple could be disjointed. The guy may be giving gifts and thinking that's what, to him, that's showing love. And what she wants is somebody to wash the dishes.
Right.
Yeah, and a real classic.
People very much tend to speak the language that they hear most often, that to them communicates love.
Right.
And so you do what you want, and whether that's necessarily what the other person hears or not is, you know, might not be.
So if we watch what our spouse does for us, that's probably what they want done back to them, you're saying.
That's a real good indicator.
They're probably expressing the love language that they're asking for. That's interesting.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's often one of the clues to help figure out what the other person's love language is.
Yeah. And it's a matter of really observing that and then actually asking the other person in a heavy conversation about, you know, what I would really like is this or that or whatever it is, and just communicating about it. And then make a commitment to, okay, I will do that. It's not the language that I normally speak, but I care enough and respect you enough that I will speak your language.
And it's great to do all five. There's nothing the matter with.
Yeah, they're all good.
With that, they're all wonderful tools. What we say to couples is, if you're short on time, just absolutely make sure you hit the one that's most important to your spouse or your partner.
Sounds like good advice. So what else have you noticed in your workshops?
One of the other tools that we teach couples is a communication skill called character quality language. In looking at the current marriage research, one of the key findings by John Gottman, who has been researching marriage now for about 30 years, is that couples who attack each other's character are really headed down the rocky road towards divorce. If they are regularly having communications where one is calling the other one irresponsible or stupid, calling names, taking any of the character qualities and turning them around and attacking the other person, so saying that they're dishonest, saying that they're lying, saying that they're not loyal, anything where they are really attacking the core of the other person, it becomes highly destructive to the marriage. When we looked at that research result, we then started asking what should couples do instead and came up with this character quality language tool. What it looks like is being highly intentional about including the words that describe character in a positive way in a sentence. And at the beginning, it can sound a little awkward and a little uncomfortable until you get used to it. But watch what happens to the other person when you use it. Their face will light up, because you're speaking positively about the very core of them. And what it looks like is, thank you for being thoughtful. So instead of saying, that was a nice thing you did, you're actually speaking to the person's ability to practice the character quality of thoughtfulness. Or, I so appreciated how patient you were with our daughter. She was really struggling with her homework, and it helped her that you patiently worked through all of the problems with her. Patience is a core character quality, and in that moment, you have honored the best in your spouse. Craig finds, even in the business setting, that he'll sign off an email message to a customer using this language. So it's
Thank
even,
you for appreciation.
Mm-hmm. You know, or you know, appreciated your courtesy, and, you know, any of those kinds of things. And what we tell parents in particular is that it's vital that they practice character quality language with each other as a demonstration to their children, and also practice it with their children as one of the key tools for actually developing and building character in their children. One of the primary responsibilities parents have is to raise a child to have a strong character. And character quality language is one of the key tools for helping a child to develop a strong character, because then they are regularly hearing when they're doing it well, when they're doing a particular action well, when they're speaking in a way that is positive and reflecting character qualities. And the whole family is conscious of when particular qualities are being practiced and strengthening those qualities together as a family.
Yeah, I think that's a good point to acknowledge the role of the Virtues Project, some of the basis for the work that we're doing. We've chosen to use the term character where they've used the word virtues, but they're in actuality the same thing. We have collaborated closely with the Virtues Project in our work and taken what they're doing primarily in schools and child education and taken it into the venue of relationships and marriage.
Yeah, they
deeply indebted to them for their assistance.
And they've really supported us by giving us a lot of their research as well. Anybody who wants to check out their work, it's at virtuesproject.com.
A problem that people constantly talk about, men and women, is sex and how sex degrades over time in a marriage. Has any of your work given us any hope in solving this age-old problem?
One of the key things that we talk to couples about is spiritual sex. They're so used to images in the media about the entire focus of sex being on fireworks happening or things being totally focused on the physical. And we ask them to step back and really look at the role of sex and lovemaking within a marriage. You know, Baha'u'llah talks about unity as being the fundamental principle that needs to operate in the world. And if you look at the act of making love between a husband and a wife, they are closer physically when they are doing that than at any other point in their relationship. And so we ask them to look at that moment as being a key way that they practice unity within their marriage. We also suggest to them that all of the character qualities apply to sexual intimacy, that those qualities are not just for the kitchen and the office and wherever else they happen to be interacting with each other or with other people, but they also belong in the bedroom. We suggest that they look at qualities like cooperation or patience. How about enthusiasm or flexibility? All of them apply. Certainly the quality of purity, which has cleanliness as an aspect, is something that it's very easy for people to understand how that applies to sexual intimacy. But we also ask them to broaden their outlook and practice all of the rest of these qualities in the bedroom as well, or wherever you happen to be making love. It may not necessarily for everybody be in the bedroom. We really help them to see that sex and lovemaking are a key part of what keeps the marriage going. It doesn't mean that if it's not there, you know, if you have a physical problem or there's illness or whatever, that means that the marriage should go away. But we also don't want couples to regard it as unimportant. It is part of what has been given to couples within marriage as a gift. Baha'u'llah has asked couples to wait and have sex when they are married, to not engage in sexually intimate acts before they're married, to save that as a gift that they give each other. We talk to couples who have made other choices. And then when they approach marriage, they are really struggling, and often there's issues of jealousy or concern about what other experiences their partner may have had, and then comparisons come up. And we really see some heartache and struggle going on. Baha'u'llah is asking couples to make the choice of chastity, both before marriage and after marriage. before marriage, it includes abstaining from sexual acts, which is not part of the picture of chastity after marriage. But chastity has the wonderful gift of protecting our thoughts from straying to thinking about someone other than our partner. It includes faithfulness. It includes not making choices of entertainment that make us think about other people besides our partner in a sexual way. And practicing chastity then really protects the integrity of the marriage and the marriage bond. What Baha'u'llah is asking couples to do is arrive at marriage prepared to give each other their pure physical selves, and for the two of them together then to explore sexuality, to develop their sexual relationship within the protection of marriage. Chastity is the quality that allows them to do that. And then if they continue to practice chastity after marriage, in the ways that protect the bond of marriage, the integrity of the marriage, so that neither of them are tempted by other people or make choices that are unfaithful or not respectful to their partner, then the marriage has a greater chance of sustaining itself and maintaining its unity.
What should you tell our listeners about the workshops that you folks do and the other resources that you provide?
Yeah, we have a variety of resources that we're making available to folks. One piece is a website. Ron has mentioned marriagetransformation.com. It's the website. On there, there's a variety of resources that are linked to, and there's also on the website sign up for a free e-newsletter that we publish periodically.
Each month that newsletter tends to focus on a particular book as a resource. Usually there's articles, any announcements about new materials, new books that we're putting out. As we mentioned, our newest book is for individuals, Can We Dance? Learning the Steps for a Fulfilling Relationship. It's available through all bricks and mortar and online bookstores pretty much. We have our book
on the website.
Yes, of course, through our e-store. And our book for married couples is Pure Gold, Encouraging Character Qualities in Marriage. The theme of character runs very strongly through both of those books. We're happy to supply them in bulk to anyone who wishes to do a discussion group or their own workshop. We're happy to coach and support people who want to use the materials and assist people to be successful in whatever they want to do with them.
Are most of your workshops in the Ohio area, or do you have them around the country?
No, actually, when we do workshops at this point, it can be anywhere on the planet. We've done a number in Canada and throughout the United States. We've also done China in the last year, so we'll go wherever it seems to make sense to go. The next one that we'll be doing will be for married couples at Boschba High School in Santa Cruz, California, in mid-November, and there's details on our website. But we're willing to travel and set up a workshop for anyone who's interested in hosting us.
We do two different formats of workshops. One would be for singles, where the Can We Dance book would be basically the text for it, and then different format for engaged and married couples, where Pure Gold would be the text for the workshop.
We've also recognized, though, that it's important for people to be empowered. We can't be everywhere. And so we're supporting and encouraging people to take our books and set up a discussion group. We have a group out in Portland, Oregon at the moment who meets once a week for dinner. Everybody's responsible for reading a chapter the week before. Then they get together and discuss it after dinner. We think that's a great model, and encourage people who are not yet married to do the same thing with Can We Dance? It's set up for individuals to learn relationship skills, and the discussion group is a great format for that to happen in.
Yeah, I've read both books. It seems like both are written, so it would be very much a self-help. You don't really need someone to hold your hand to take you through the book. They're both laid out very nicely for groups to work through on their own.
And there's cartoons all the way through both of them as well. For those of you who appreciate spikes of humor scattered throughout the seriousness of some of the subject matter, we try and make sure that there's a balanced approach, just as we encourage within marriage and relationship have a balanced approach to make sure that you're going out on dates with each other even after marriage, and that you're spending time having fun together and making sure that you're still laughing together, that you're not so focused on managing the day-to-day tasks of marriage that you forget the roots of what brought you together in the first place. That's actually one of the ways that we start our workshops, is by having people identify positive memories from early on in their relationship so that they can reconnect to those actions and words that happened early on and repeat them. I think one last thing that makes sense to mention is the importance of connecting spirituality together with marriage. We really encourage couples to pray together, study whatever scripture they believe in together, to find some points of spiritual connection together. It might be worshiping together, it might be reading inspirational books together. Whatever it is that builds and strengthens the spiritual connection between the couple. It's one of the reasons we've focused on character, because all of these qualities of love and patience and flexibility are really qualities of the soul. And when we ask couples to study those qualities and understand them better, it's really strengthening the spiritual bond between them and strengthening the spiritual foundation of their marriage.
And the universals, regardless of what faith tradition one may be practicing.
Absolutely. Well, great point, Craig, because character shows up in all of the scriptures around the planet, all of the faith. We really understand from the Baha'i writings that our character qualities are eternal. They're not just here for this time on earth, that they will go with us along with our soul to whatever world or whatever it is that happens after we die. And if couples together can strengthen those qualities and really support the development of those qualities in each other, then that's a gift that they give each other for all eternity.
Well, Suzanne and Craig, it's been great talking to you. I hope that the folks will go to your website and check out all of the great stuff that you've got going on, and read the books and improve their marriage. So,
well,
folks,
it's great talking to you, Ron.
Thank you. So, folks, thank you for listening, and remember, you're welcome to join us at any time. You've been listening to the podcast of the Baha'is of Florida's Emerald Coast. If you'd like to learn more about the Baha'i Faith, the international site is baha'i.org. You'll find information about the faith, and there's also links to the Baha'i communities in several dozen countries around the world. Or check out our new blog at ecbp.blogspot.com. That's ecbp.blogspot.com. There's links to Baha'i websites and some great Baha'i podcasts. You can phone us if you want to talk to a human. Call 1-800-22-UNITE, or in Florida, call 850-543-2129. You can leave us a voicemail toll-free at 866-590-4545, or email us at panhandlebahais@aol.com. Thanks for listening.